Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to a special Monday night edition of the Worldview. We're so glad to have you tuned in. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. We're glad to be here on a Monday night. You have to have your priorities straight. That's what it is. You have to have your priorities straight. And here at the McBurney compound, the bird whisperer has been candling the duck's eggs on an almost daily basis. And she has confirmed, it is her professional opinion as a bird whisperer, that we will soon be joined by 8 new ducks. So we'll go from 3 ducks to 11 ducks. And the ducks are living currently in a crate. And that is not up to the normally high standards that we have for livestock here around the McBurney compound. And so we had to spend the entire weekend building a 2-room duck house. It's quite luxurious. Probably tornado-proof, too. It's the 3.5-inch deck screws. No nails. No way. Uh-uh. No. And the ducks have a little anteroom. So it's 2-room. They got a big bedroom where they can all huddle and live. And then a little anteroom in case they have guests come over or something. They can greet them in the foyer, maybe give them a glass of wine. Anyway, it's a very nice, very nice. It's almost finished. It's not quite finished, but, we have to put it off. We have to put off the final touches. We hope we have enough time. Has the bird whisperer commented on her professional opinion on when the ducks will arrive? She has an opinion on that? Oh, so we've got a couple of weeks. All right, so we'll be okay. We'll get the roof on. We'll get the air conditioning put in. And get the spa going for us and like that. So that's why we weren't able to come to you on Sunday night. So we worked right up until dark, and we were frankly just too tired to do anything else after that. But we're back. It's Monday, and almost half of Americans polled. We'll get right to the news here. A Rasputin poll reports. No, it's not Rasputin. I'm sorry. It's Rasmussen. Rasmussen? I thought I saw So this poll, this was a poll of 1,000 likely U.S. voters conducted last month by Rasputin. And they say that almost half of Americans favor guaranteed government jobs for all. This is from the Decline and Fall file. Nearly half of our civilization, apparently, if this poll is to be trusted, it's got a sampling error of plus or minus 3%. So either way, we're doomed. Whether it's plus or minus 3%, almost half of the people favor, what's his name, the crazy white-haired guy, the communist who ran?
Bill Clinton?
Not Bill Clinton. Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders' proposal that the federal government provide jobs and health care to everyone, which most normal people that I know would laugh at that, but almost half of people say they're in favor of that, which means, of course, as I said, we are doomed. Doomed! Half the people willing to slack off and go for a socialist government job. But it's not all bad news, ladies and gentlemen. The founder of Burning Man, Larry Harvey, has died. He died last Saturday. Now, you remember I talked to you that he went into a coma after suffering a massive stroke. And the news media, who always mentioned Burning Man as if it's some cultural event, they didn't spend the week that Burning Man founder Larry Harvey spent in a coma. They didn't spend that week doing tributes to his life on TV or anything like that. You didn't hear about him at all. He was just in a coma because nobody actually cares about this guy except God. Most men and women, they could care less about this guy unless they could make money off him. Which is why we have a comment from his Burning Man chief executive officer with whom he made money, Marion Goodell. Maybe it's a woman, whatever. We have a quote from her, but what do I have? Larry Harvey, founder of Burning Man, who has corrupted a million lives. A million lives were corrupted by this pervert. He died last Saturday. And now you would think that his organization would release a statement that, well, we'll just read it. A statement from Marion Goodell, Burning Man chief executive officer, whatever that means. How does a pile of hippies getting high in the mud, how do they need a chief executive officer? Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a lot of money involved. Here's what Marion Goodell said. She said, quote, "We resolutely held out for a miracle." A miracle, she says. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, a miracle. If she was actually holding out for a miracle, she or he, or anyone involved with the Burning Man organization, if they were actually holding out for a miracle, they would have been humble before God and praying and weeping, begging God for a miracle to save their friend's life. But that's not what they were doing. They were counting money and checking in on Harvey to see if he was still alive, in my opinion. I'm not privy to any personal inside information. Marion Goodell goes on to say, well, she says, "We resolutely held out for a miracle. And if there was anyone tenacious, strong-willed, and stubborn enough to come back from this challenge, it was Larry." Doesn't sound very humble, like they were humbling themselves and begging for a miracle at all. Well, Larry didn't come back. They say he passed peacefully last Saturday morning. I'm sorry, the Saturday before last. No, last Saturday morning, just a couple of days ago. They say he passed peacefully at 8:24 a.m. in San Francisco. He's a Burning Man right now. He's got a front row seat to Burning Man. He was 70 years old, and I'm here to tell you he died not so peacefully. Well, the actual death might have been peaceful, but after that, it wasn't peaceful. It was Burning Man time. All right, now my mom always said, if you don't have something nice to say about someone, don't say anything at all. So I should have left this aside. You know what this does? By me taking pot shots at Larry Harvey after he dies, this gives all my enemies the moral authority to take pot shots at me after I die. Speaking of that, let's go to John McCain, who's not dead yet, but he's getting ready. John McCain says he doesn't know how much longer he'll be here, and he feels comfortable. He can speak his mind now. So now that he knows he's about to meet God, he's confessing that he can stop lying to all of us. So anyway, he says he does not want Donald Trump at his funeral. He would like Vice President Mike Pence to come. Okay. All right, John. Well, you got brain cancer. I guess we have to feel sorry for you. He's been battling an aggressive form of brain cancer for nearly a year. Underwent surgery last month for an intestinal infection. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Brain cancer, intestinal infection. He says, "I don't know how much longer I'll be here." All right, that's true. Well, John, let me give you a little advice. You don't know how much longer you're going to be here, but you'll be in hell for all eternity. All eternity. Now, the positive thing for John McCain is that the longer he lingers and suffers, the more likely he'll actually humble himself and ask God to forgive him for being such a despicable human being and for advocating the murder of all the children that he advocated and for stealing all the trillions of dollars he stole from hardworking families during his entire Senate career. Let me just say that I wish John McCain as much discomfort and pain as possible as he lingers and suffers in hopes that it will humble him before his creator, because once he passes on to the other side, he doesn't pass go, he doesn't collect $200, he doesn't get to go to Burning Man with Larry Harvey. No, it's the judgment and it's straight to hell for John McCain.
Yeah, that's the Burning Man.
Yeah. John McCain will be the Burning Man? Yeah. Absolutely, he could be. But I've never seen, and not one iota of evidence ever, that John McCain ever humbled himself and said, "I'm sorry" about anything, let alone to apologize to God for his rebellion against God. So I just have no evidence. And so I give John the benefit of the doubt. I assume he's going to hell. I wish him as much discomfort and pain as possible in hopes that it will bring him to some humbling experience before his creator. All right. So death seems to be the theme. We have a scientist here from Switzerland, David Goodall. He's 104 years old. He's Australia's oldest scientist. It's like England's loudest band. Is that really something you want on your, as the headline? Australia's oldest scientist will fly to Switzerland in early May to end his life. He's going to kill himself. David Goodall, he's 104 years old. He has produced dozens of research papers and until recently continued to review and edit for different ecology journals. Ecology, I said. Is that a real science? I think it actually is. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt and assume he was an effective and virtuous and honest scientist. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt since I never heard of him before this. And I don't peruse the ecology journals regularly. So anyway, here's what he has to say about himself. He says, "I greatly regret having reached the age of 104. I'm not happy. I want to die." Just a terrible example for the young people. I mean, I understand you're 104. You're probably uncomfortable. It's probably relatively miserable. But, you know, you owe it to society to buck up and keep your chin up and put a good face on it for the sake of the children, for crying out loud. But no, instead, he says, what does he say? He says, "My feeling is that an old person like myself should have the right of assisted suicide," which is what he's going for there in Switzerland. Apparently, Australia, assisted suicide has been legalized there, but it doesn't take effect until June of 2019. So not one to break the law, Mr. Goodall, and he's probably not going to wait till 2019. So he's just going to go to Switzerland. Well, this is another example of fake phony law. Fake phony law, it's not in effect in Switzerland and not in effect in Australia. Real law would be in effect, whether you're in Switzerland or in Australia. And there wouldn't be an effective date if this assisted suicide law were real. So while it may be acted upon and while it may be enforced as if it were a law, and people will actually die because of it, it's not a real law. It's a fake, phony law. Australia has been debating euthanasia back and forth for years, which I think that even to allow a debate on suicide is a criminal act. You should not be able to debate whether or not we should legalize criminal activity. So the fact that they've allowed the debate means that eventually they will legalize it. Some things should not even be debated. I'm sorry. Well, at least not. Are we going to have a debate on whether or not we should legalize the murder of a homeless vagrant in San Francisco? You can't have a debate like that. The people advocating the murder would have to be arrested for advocating murder. But they've been debating it for quite some time, apparently, and the debate goes on. Mr. Goodall, he has a trip sponsored with Exit International, which is a suicide group that provides death with dignity. A peaceful, dignified death is the entitlement of all who want it. So we open up with the entitlement, right? 46% of Americans say they think they're entitled to a job. By the time they get old, they're going to figure they're entitled to be able to kill themselves. It's a wild, insane, crazy world. And you and I are some of the few normal people left amongst the madness. So Exit International has launched a GoFundMe campaign. So, yeah, and you ask, well, what is that, to pay for his suicide drugs? Is that to buy him a plane ticket to Switzerland so that he won't be in violation of the fake phony law there in Australia? No. A GoFundMe campaign has been launched to get Goodall's plane tickets upgraded to business class from economy. So he's currently flying to his impending suicide in economy class, and advocates, they want to upgrade him to business. Why not first class, for crying out loud? I'm Doug McBurney. Hey, yeah, no, get him out of here. There's another advocate, a suicide advocate. I mean, he didn't do articles or do interviews advocating suicide. So he committed suicide.
All his songs.
All of his songs made you want to commit suicide. Almost all, yeah. That was, so a lot of our listening audience may not be familiar with who that was. Eh, we probably shouldn't give him any. Whatever. So anyway, the whole 90s was like a suicide trip, the whole decade. I mean, all their biggest stars either killed themselves at the time or are slowly killing themselves as we move forward. So anyway, the 90s, a low watermark of American culture, no doubt. Probably something we can never recover from, the 1990s. All of it. But let's move on now, because things are, well, they're much worse now than they were in the 90s. We go to the culture file, where we will check in via the Charlotte Observer with one of North Carolina's most notorious all-male prisons. Yes. Well, there's a court fight has erupted over religious liberty in one of North Carolina's most notorious all-male prisons. And the fight is being led by a transgender witch who resides there at the North Carolina all-male notorious prison. Jennifer Ann Jasmine is his name. He actually went into prison as, let's see, do they say? I think they have his actual name here. I can't find it. Anyway, the Jennifer is a transgender witch, which means... Let's see, if the witch is in an all-male prison and it's transgendered, what was the original gender? That's confusing. Well, I assume because it has a female name that it's actually a boy. And despite the fact that this witch claims that he is transgendered, they're still keeping him in the notorious all-male prison because everybody knows that he's actually still a boy. Anyway, the witch says that the prison is blocking the practice of her spiritual beliefs, which just happened to be witchcraft. And so he filed a complaint this month. Oh, here it is. In 2015, as inmate Dwayne, Jennifer sued the correctional institution, a different prison on the same grounds. But apparently he was a male witch then, which is a warlock. He says the chaplains at Lanesboro Prison there in North Carolina have restricted when, where, and how he can practice Wicca and have spitefully refused to provide the foods Wiccans are supposed to eat. What else? What other complaints? He. All right, his name is Dwayne. We'll just call him Dwayne for crying out loud. That's what he went in as, Dwayne. We're going to call him Dwayne. Dwayne wants to order prison officials to provide him with a number of religious necessities, he says, including the Book of Shadows, which is their, that's their version of the Bible, the Book of Shadows. He says, I want the Book of Shadows. I want a wand, tarot cards, runes, candles, a bell, a black robe, vanilla ice cream, and oatmeal cakes. And herbs and dried fruits as they become available seasonally. So that's what he wants as a transgender witch.
So what did he do?
No, that's, and I have a note here at the bottom of the article. The article never says what he's in for. So they don't even say what it is he did to his fellow human beings to land him in one of North Carolina's most notorious prisons. It doesn't say what he's in for. I didn't have time to look it up. But anyway, this just shows that long-term incarceration leads not only to the hardening of the heart of the prisoner and reduces the possibility of repentance, but it also leads to the absolutely ridiculous. Vanilla ice cream and oatmeal cakes? How do those fit into Wicca? I mean, I'm not familiar, I'll admit. The herbs and dried fruits? I mean, at least the wand and the tarot cards, I can comprehend what.
Knife and rope. And
that's what they should give him. A knife, some rope. Yeah, that's what he should. That's what he should get. All right. Well, no, we don't advocate suicide, so we don't want to give him a knife. But he shouldn't be locked up like an animal like that. Whatever he did, he should have been punished, and he should have been able to get on with his life, whether it was in this world or the next. That's all. But instead, it's ridiculous. Now, speaking of ridiculous, have I not warned everyone, or at least made the prediction, that the Me Too movement is a fake, phony movement that's relatively meaningless in the large, bigger picture of societal degeneration in general? I have, right? I have told you that the Me Too movement makes no appeal to genuine authority. There's no genuine repentance. And upon serious observation, the people in the Me Too movement will eventually admit that they have no grounds to claim that anything going on was wrong at all, because they're a bunch of heathens. And they reject God, and they reject marriage, and they reject the sanctity of sexual union within marriage only. And here we go. Here is the first symptom of the Me Too movement, at the fact that it will all amount to not a change in the culture of sexual immorality, but it will make it even worse. And here we go. The story is from the Hollywood Reporter. Let's see, filmmaker Bernardo Bertolucci. Now, have you ever heard of this fellow? He asked. No, never. I never heard of him either. Well, he is a filmmaker, okay? And let's see, a fellow filmmaker. Oh, he has criticized fellow filmmaker Ridley Scott's decision last year to replace Kevin Spacey in the movie All the Money in the World. They replaced Kevin Spacey. Why? Well, Spacey was accused of sexually assaulting more than a dozen young men. When they were vulnerable early in their acting careers, Kevin Spacey took advantage. And so Ridley Scott wrote him out of the movie and replaced him with Christopher Plummer. Well, Bernardo Bertolucci is upset about that. And during the world premiere of his movie, Last Tango in Paris, last Saturday night, Bertolucci said that when he learned that Spacey had been edited out, he said his reaction was to message Ridley Scott. He texted Ridley Scott's editor, saying, "Tell Scott that he should be ashamed." So here, now, are you familiar with The Last Tango in Paris? You're not. It's one of the first full-on pornographic movies that ever became really big in America back in the 70s. And so this guy is a direct contributor to the decline and fall of Western civilization, should have been arrested for making the film Last Tango in Paris back then, but he wasn't. And so now we've degenerated to this level where we uncover deviants like Kevin Spacey crawling around, molesting people. Well, it was a film like The Last Tango in Paris that created the environment that led to Kevin Spacey. Everyone involved should have been arrested. So this Bernardo Bertolucci, he didn't even make a new movie. He premiered a movie that he made like 40 years ago. They just retouched it up, put it in high def. Anyway, just a disgusting bunch of people. Bertolucci. So after he criticized Ridley Scott for editing out the pervert rapist, Kevin Spacey, he says, quote, and then I, Bernardo Bertolucci, immediately wanted to make a film with Kevin Spacey. And the audience at the premiere cheered. So he says he wants to make a film with a guy who's been credibly accused of raping young, vulnerable men. He says he wants to make a movie with him, and the audience applauds. They say there was much applause from the audience. Now, he clarified that he agrees completely with the Me Too movement. And I suppose he can get away with saying that because the Me Too movement is basically a hollow, vapid, vomiting out upon civilization, by civilization. It's like we're vomiting on ourselves over this. And once all the puke is cleaned up, we will all be two or three rungs lower on the civilization ladder. That's all. That's my... I think the Me Too movement is a false movement. It'll come to nothing good. And an even deeper culture of immorality in Hollywood and beyond will be the result. Because there's been no appeal to genuine godliness, no repentance. In fact, the Me Too movement, at least from what I can tell, is based primarily on revenge and hatred. That's what it's based on, and that's why I think nothing good comes of it, and that's why I don't share the hashtag, just in case you haven't noticed. I don't recall that I've ever shared a hashtag. Tried to make up a hashtag, but I didn't know what they were for. So I end up embarrassing myself because I didn't know what they were about. And I'm not about to find out. I don't need that in my life. I have enough going on already. All right, now, let's move on from the pornographers who have destroyed our culture and are cheered, and they're cheered for it. Let's move on to the government schools where we come to you with reason number 1,135 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. We have a father from Florida, as reported by Breitbart. We have a Florida dad who is disgusted and shocked by a question that his teenage daughter got in her anatomy homework. So right there, you have public schools and anatomy homework. You should be nervous. You got the government, the godless government schools teaching your children about anatomy. That's scary right there. And here is an actual question from a Florida teenager on her anatomy homework. Here's how the question was phrased. Ursula was devastated when her boyfriend broke up with her after having sex. Could we stop right there? I mean, right there, Dad. So the question goes on. To get revenge, she had sex with his best friend the next day. Ursula had a beautiful baby girl 9 months later. Ursula has type O blood. Her ex-boyfriend is type AB, and his best friend is type A. If her baby daddy is her ex-boyfriend, what could her baby's possible blood type not be? That's the question. All right. So hapless dad shared his disgust and shock about the lack of morality in a school that he's shocked by the lack of morality in a school that is founded on the idea that there is no morality. He's shocked that it's missing. Well, it was extricated from the schools probably before even hapless dad was born, more than likely. Well, he was shocked by the lack of morality in a school assignment designed for high school students. He blasted the high school for allowing this material to be taught in the schools. What are you people thinking about? So the school issued a statement, as they're wont to do, because nobody wants to stand up in front of the camera and actually answer questions. So they release a statement. The school said, quote, while this was not a district-created item, we recognize that this falls well short of our standard of providing instructional excellence for every student every day. And we would like to apologize to the students and their families. That was their statement. So they apologized, but did they ever admit they did anything wrong? Because the actual construction of the question is it's scientifically and educationally valid. It's just all the sexual immorality in which it is clothed is... So, well, I'm a dad. I'm shocked. I'm disgusted. And there's no way any of my children will ever get a question like this on any homework ever. Doug McBurney is the Weekly Worldview. Thank you so much for tuning in to our special Monday night edition here at the Weekly Worldview. And we'll continue. That was reason number 1,135, in no particular order, to get your children out of the government school. We went to break before I had the dad's final statement. A hapless dad who's shocked and disgusted that his godless government school would... do what they did. Says, I think that we can do better. He says, I think you could do better, Dad. I'll bet you could keep your kids at home even if you barely graduated high school, and you could do better than what's happening to your daughter. In fact, Dad, I want to challenge you to do better. How about that? All right. Now, last week I made the comment that I've been beginning to notice that the local news, the local TV news, is actually designed to desensitize us to perversion and freakishness. And I'm beginning to suspect the same of the New York Times, shockingly enough. I have a story from the Times here, a horrible, tragic story from the Domestic Tranquility File that reports on a couple, a married couple. In fact, let's just read the article. Jennifer Hart drunkenly drove a sport utility vehicle straight off a 100-foot cliff on the Northern California coast late last month, taking her life and those of her wife and their adopted children. Those who knew the Harts wondered, how could a family that looked so happy and normal in photos have hidden such a dark life from public view? Did you catch that? Jennifer took the life of her wife. And
no more.
And that's not, now you're not allowed to notice that. You have to say that that is normal. They look totally normal. Just another lesbian couple who adopted half a dozen children. And now we find out, according to reports released last week by child welfare officials there in California, the reports paint a portrait of a pair of mothers who doled out cruel punishment and perennially withheld food from their six children. So they were mean, evil, rotten human beings involved in a sexually deviant lifestyle, completely self-absorbed, and adopted children in order to abuse them. And they did abuse them, and eventually at least the one killed them all. And herself. The searchers are at last report. Searchers were still looking for the bodies. They found the bodies of the lesbians and four of the six children: Marcus, 19 years old; Jeremiah, 14; Abigail, 14; Sierra, 12. As of last week, Devontae, 15; and Hannah, 16, were still missing, but of course are feared dead. By the way, these reports, not only from California, but go back to Minnesota, where the Dykes were from before they murdered their children and killed themselves. The problem, one Minnesota welfare worker noted, according to documents, was that Jennifer and Sarah Hart looked so normal. Who could have ever suspected that they were this evil? And we're all supposed to act like they, well, they were normal except for the murder-suicide thing. That's the only thing. Well, and then there was the abuse of the children. That's, but they look normal. They look like just your normal, everyday, average married couple. And we're all supposed to become just one more step conditioned toward accepting the fact that sexual deviants are normal. We're supposed to just, well, I refuse. I will not accept it. If I see a pair of Dykes with a bunch of kids, I notice that they're not normal. So how many Dykes are married, by the way? I mean, by definition, it's not normal. Normal would mean like most, or at least a lot. There aren't that many. So they're certainly not normal, nor shall they be considered normal, at least not here in the McBurney compound. So there, all right. Now, that was domestic tranquility. We move now further down, devolving through the decline and fall file, where the Boy Scouts have a new name. Why? Because the Boy Scouts are no longer the Boy Scouts. It's for boys, it's for girls, it's for questioning, transgender, gay, lesbian. Is there anyone I missed? You can all join the Boy Scouts. So they had to get rid of the name because, well, the name boy makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It seems discriminatory. And so they've changed their name. Chief Scout Executive, Mike, made a comment. He's the Chief Scout Executive of a dying organization, belching out its last gasps.
Maybe it was a woman, too.
Yeah, could be. Could be transgendered. You never know. And Mike, when he first became a scout, he was a Girl Scout. His name was Michelle. Now he's the Chief Scout Executive, goes by Mike. Mike says, quote, above the name change, Mike says, quote, we wanted to land on something that evokes the past, but also conveys the inclusive nature of the program going forward. We're trying to find the right way to say we're here for both young men and young women. Now, he leaves out the queers there. Isn't that discriminatory right there? How dare he even imply that there's such a thing as young men and young women? Mike obviously hasn't learned his lesson. I think that we need to file some more. We need some more perverts to file more lawsuits against the. Now they're called Scouts BSA. So you can have fun with the letters we did here at the McBurney compound. But none of that's going to go on the air. Scouts BSA, we just. Anyway, the first two letters seem fairly obvious. The third letter you can figure out for yourselves. All right.
All right.
Scouts BSA, by the way, according to the article from the New York Post, has already started admitting girls into the Cub Scouts. Boys and girls in Scouts BSA will refer to themselves simply as Scouts, rather than adding the discriminatory titles of boy and girl as a modifier. You're just Scouts. Shut up and go Scout. All right. So there, the long-awaited death of an organization that was killed by former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson when he opened it up to the homos. Well, now it is gasped. Well, I guess it's still gasping its last breath, but we can bet that the last breath is close at hand with Scouts BSA. And now we move from the Scouts to the Justice File, where I've got a story from the Telegraph in London. This is interesting. You've heard of the CRISPR system. The CRISPR system is a way to edit DNA. CRISPR snips away genes and replaces them with other code. It could be damaged genes being replaced with healthy code, or CRISPR could just replace perfectly healthy genes and replace the code. And CRISPR has been hailed as a massive scientific advancement, which it is. And it is widely hoped in the scientific community that it will one day fix genetic diseases. So, which, of course, it has the potential to do, and we're all in support of that. But researchers have recently postulated the idea that CRISPR DNA editing could be used by criminals to evade justice. Yes, one professor, Professor George Church of Harvard University, which is a fairly, you know, guys at Harvard know a lot of stuff, right? Professors at Harvard. He pioneered the use of the CRISPR technique, and he says that it would be possible for criminals to use the technique to disappear from forensic databases or even evade detection. How about that? Well, that's a little scary. So I think maybe, if this is true, and of course, the guy from Harvard knows about it more than I do, but if you can actually edit your own DNA so that you could disappear from the databases, well, then CRISPR should not be available to the public. I'm sorry. And apparently it is. Apparently you can buy a home gene editing kit for under $2,000. Apparently. Unless this is all made up, which it could be. Hard to say. Professor George Church, is he actually a professor at Harvard? I have a friend at Harvard. I'll have to call and ask him if he's ever run across Professor George Church and see if this article is legitimate or not. I always thought that about CRISPR when I read an article about this crazy, tatted-up, purpled-haired, freaky kid who's selling CRISPR online for a couple of grand. I read that article. I don't think I did it on the show because, I don't know, not everything can make the show. And the kid gave me the creeps. And I'm so excited about the possibilities of DNA editing. I think there's a lot of value there and good things, and I was very sad to hear that this crazy psycho kid was selling it online, and now to hear that it could be used by criminals, I mean, it's like we have access to all these fantastic scientific advancements that could revolutionize society and medicine and life and science and aging. It's all there right at our fingertips, but because we have allowed society to fall into the hands of madmen and criminals, we could blow it all. Singing along there, and so glad to be back, ladies and gentlemen, as we go from criminal DNA editing deeper and darker into the decline and fall file. And for that, of course, we go to San Francisco, where the San Francisco Board of Supervisors has approved a resolution. Yes, they've designated the Leather District as a cultural district. That's right. It's the Leather and LGBTQ Cultural District now. We did it as a way to honor the past and ensure the area remains a refuge. It's the Leather District in San Francisco. You don't even want to know what it is. I mean, you can guess, right? Leather, San Francisco, a lot of lisping, bars. Okay. I don't have to paint. Judas Priest type. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. So, yeah, the Board of Supervisors has created a cultural district. So they've designated several square blocks full of bars, and I don't even want to paint a picture of what goes on there. It's now a historical cultural district. And well, the article here from U.S. News, I'll put a link to it because you got to read this. The community, the leather community, actually they call it, they actually call it the leather community. Interesting when you choose to define yourself by like the leather apparatuses that you, anyway. The leather community, according to U.S. News and World Report, has a rich record of public service. I wasn't aware of that. Anyway, they go in. You can read it for yourself. And oddly enough, the area full of bars and anyway, all this the area first became famous, according to this article, in a 1964 Life magazine article called "Homosexuality in America," and it was Life magazine actually publishing pictures and positive descriptive text about the leather community in San Francisco, which was a mistake. 1964, I don't know. I wasn't born yet, but I thought that in 1964 that a mainstream magazine wouldn't have been allowed to publish such a thing, but apparently they were. And so there you have it. Life magazine glamorized this particularly disgusting and hurtful lifestyle back in the early 1960s. And here we are 50 years later, and now it is a cultural historic district. But we're tearing down those Civil War statues. That's got to get rid of those. Would you blow up Mount Rushmore and get rid of all the... It's just really weird. I'm not a big fan of Civil War statues, don't get me wrong. But it just shows the disconnect and the cultural dissonance that is building and building and building and threatens to tear us all apart. And there's several segments of our current society that I would prefer to be torn asunder from. Thank you very much. I will not be donating to the museum that they'll be putting there in the Leather District. I'd rather be disassociated from all that. Now, let's go to the justice file where CBS Channel 46 reports that deputies in court had to restrain the mother of a 3-year-old boy last week when the 15-year-old boy accused of killing him, that was her little 3-year-old boy, the 15-year-old appeared to smirk in court while waiting a bond hearing. He smirked, and the mother of the 3-year-old who had been murdered said, "What's funny? What's funny?" Deputies had to rush in to separate members of the victim's family as they began to clash with the defendant's family. The mom had called out Christopher Cullens, 15 years old. He's an 8th grade student. He was arrested after an April 1st shooting claimed the life of 3-year-old Trahege Craig. So a shooting claimed the life of. All right. So couldn't they say that Christopher Cullens, 15, is accused of shooting and killing 3-year-old Trahege Craig? No, they can't say that. Journalists are trained never to assign any blame to anything, anyone, except an inanimate object, like a shooting, or a concept, or an event. They can assign blame to an inanimate object, a concept, or an event, but they can't even assign the possibility that Christopher Cullens shot and killed Trahege Craig. But that's why the trial is going on, is because Christopher Cullens, 15-year-old 8th grade student, there's credible evidence that he shot and killed this 3-year-old. The little boy was asleep in the back of his mother's SUV when he was struck by a bullet. Struck by a bullet, they say in the article. And that's why the mother was so upset at the bullet, because the bullet struck her. She was mad at the killer, or the accused killer. I'm not going to get into the details, but why he smirked? Yeah. Why? Because he knows what's going to happen to him. He can smirk. I know. The right thing for the judge to do would have been to let the mother at least inflict some harm on the boy. And I'm sure the mother would have been willing to do some jail time if the judge would just let her get her hands on his neck for just a few seconds. Well, I guess he hasn't been convicted yet, but that's a problem as well. Should have already been convicted. How long does it take?
Why is he laughing?
Yeah, he's laughing because he has no fear of God. That's why. Because the justice system is a joke. And anyway, one day, this will be made right. Just want to let this mother know that that little smirk, that will be repaid in spades. All right, now, let's go to reason number 1,136. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. According to a recent survey, over 65% of 8th graders can't read or write or do math. Well, the article from CNS News actually says that 65% of 8th graders in American public schools were not proficient in reading, and 67% were not proficient in mathematics. That means they can't read, they can't write, and they can't do math. And that's nationwide. It's worse for students enrolled in some urban districts. The cities are worse than the country. Only 5% of Detroit public school 8th graders were proficient or better in math. 7% were proficient or better in reading. That's Detroit. And we wonder why, what's happening in Detroit. So besides the fact that the government schools will train your children to believe that there is no God and to question your belief in God. Aside from that, they won't be able to read or write or do math either, which those are important. So that's reason number 1,136. Your kids won't get a decent education. It's way out of the top 10, but it is a valid reason. Now we go to reason number 1,137. To get or keep your children out of the godless government schools. New York, CBS New York reports that for kids in school today, lockdown drills are just another part of their day-to-day lives. Lockdown drills. That means lockdown happens, they have to duck and hide, stay out of sight, get into a darkened room, and sometimes even literally run for their lives. They're training children how to hide and how to run for their lives. Interesting. The teachers lock the doors, they pull the blinds down, and all the kids go out of sight. This is in addition to not being able to taught how to read or write or do math. And this is in addition to being taught that there is no God. And that there's no real right or wrong. It's kind of situational. But when the teachers lock the doors, the kids all know exactly what to do. They need to hide in the dark and or run for their lives. An interview here from CBS in New York with one student named Amelia. She says, quote, "I don't think parents know what we're going through sometimes," unquote. That's Amelia, a student there at the school. Amelia, parents don't know what you're going through pretty much all the time that you're at public school. They have no idea. If they had some idea, maybe they would get you out of there. Maybe they would rescue you or send in the Marines or something like that. But most of them have no idea what's happening. And apparently, the vast majority of American parents, they're comfortable with not knowing what's happening. When the details come out about the lockdowns and the hiding and the running and the screaming, they prefer not to know. And when further details come out about the sexual harassment and the abuse and the teachers molesting, apparently they don't want to know. So it's not that they don't know, Amelia. It's that they don't want to know. They'd rather not know, because if they knew, well, then that would be very uncomfortable for them. And apparently the most important thing in American life today is to not feel uncomfortable and to not make anyone else uncomfortable. Those are the only two sins that are still recognized in the godless government schools and in the pop culture and in the overall godless civilization that we have fallen into. Those are the only two sins. Don't be uncomfortable. Don't make me uncomfortable. The Weekly Worldview is here to make people uncomfortable. It's one of our missions in life. And if that makes you uncomfortable, well, then we've done our job. We appreciate you tuning in. All right, now, the credit where credit is due file, and I'm not sure about this, but I'm going to try. This is from the politics file. President Trump has signed legislation, a measure that nullifies a rule that Barack Obama passed. Barack's rule effectively barred state and local governments from defunding Planned Parenthood. And Donald Trump has signed some sort of rule that says Barry's rule is no longer in effect. Meaning, Donald Trump, what does this mean? I wanted to give him credit, but the more I read it, it almost sounds like Donald Trump did something to attempt to take a first step toward the possibility of limiting, perhaps, abortion. That's what it looked like when I read it. The more I read it, it looks like he basically has punted. Trump and Pence have punted and left it to the states to defund Planned Parenthood. They've made it legal for states to consider the possibility of introducing legislation that could lead toward a step in the direction of limiting the funding of Planned Parenthood for certain procedures. So I can't give him any credit. There's no credit due. It's up to the states now, I suppose. And Donald Trump continues now. How long into his presidency? Is it more than a year and a half? Let's see. January 20th would have been a year. February, March, April. Well, getting close to a year and a half. He has not lifted one finger to do one thing to stop one abortion in any way. So he gets no credit. And the credit where credit is due file remains empty. Meanwhile, Christians across the world are devastated. This is from the pop culture file. Christians have been devastated by rock band U2. U2, I said. Because they tweeted their support for legalizing abortion in Ireland. Apparently Ireland has something similar to our abortion regulations here in America. Ireland has what's called the Eighth Amendment to their constitution. It was enacted in 1983, and it's basically a fig leaf over the pretty much the unfettered practice of child killing in Ireland. The Eighth Amendment declares that the state of Ireland acknowledges the right to life of the unborn and, with due regard to the equal right to life of the mother, guarantees in its laws to respect and, as far as practicable, by its laws to defend and vindicate that right. So that basically says that here in Ireland we're really uncomfortable with child killing, but we're going to let it continue, but we want to let you know we're uncomfortable with it. And so there's an effort to repeal even this milquetoast, watered-down fig leaf. And U2 tweeted that, therefore, it's called Repeal the Eighth is the movement. I think there's a hashtag. Repeal the Eighth. And Bono, by the way, Bono professes to be a Christian. And he has devastated Christians across the world. Gullible evangelicals. Gullible enough to believe that Bono is... Now, I guess they originally came to popularity as some sort of a Christian act during the Jesus movement in the late 70s. And so, apparently, he still holds... I think he still wears a cross in one of his earrings.
Oh, yeah, Madonna. That's, too.
Yeah, just like Madonna. And so, people were shocked when the guy with the cross earring came out for abortion. Bono's tweet received a barrage of more than 800 overwhelmingly negative replies. Well, that's encouraging. At least people are upset with him, you know, because Bono has a soul too. He's going to end up somewhere for eternity. And if he advocates murdering innocent people, well, it doesn't look good for him, you know, so there. I guess that's all we had on that. What do we have here? Ah, from the science file, The Sun in the United Kingdom reports that a lost city has been found near Jerusalem. Historians believe they've uncovered a building belonging to an ancient settlement linked to King David. It's about 30 miles from Jerusalem. It's believed that it could be the ancient city of Eglon. The ancient city of Eglon. Which is in the Bible. The city is mentioned in the Bible as one of the five cities which fought against the Israelites before being conquered. But, says the Sun, but historians question the use of the Bible as a historical reference because most events mentioned in the text lack historical evidence. So this is reported in the Sun as if this is a fact, that most events in the Bible lack historical evidence? Well, that's completely the opposite of the truth. Most of the evidence and places and people in the Bible do have secular, extra-biblical evidence, but the average empty-headed soul reading just assumes that that's correct. Anyway, archaeologists were aided by burrowing mole rats who brought up to the surface clues about what was below, and they did an excavation, and they found what they think is the ancient city of Eglon. Radiocarbon dating has confirmed the city came from around the same time as David's kingdom. Inscribed stones have been found containing phrases referencing King David. That's in the paragraph right after they say most. That's right in the next paragraph. They reference David. But, the Sun says, but his existence and story remains disputed amongst archaeologists. And then at the very end they say King David's myth begins with him as a young shepherd who killed the giant Goliath. All right. So, anyway, just a news media designed to condition you toward ignorance and into the acceptance of lies and perversion. It's all around us. The media is our enemy at this point. And so I'm glad that you tuned in here where we are your friends. We care about you. And we are the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at American Right to Life and Denver Bible Church, and of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.